broadcasting from Hot Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus coeruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Can you feel it? Is it working? Randy England.
Good morning, Jim. Yes, I can feel it. I'm here with you here in mid-Missouri, and I'm in that mode between Christmas and New Year's where I try to do almost nothing.
Nice.
It's working out very well right now.
Nice. Well, I'm Jim Babb, and I'm so happy to be with you, Randy England. It's been a little too long since the Fiendmatron supercomputer has paired us up as Fiend hosts, so great to be with you, sir.
I think that's right. I think it was back earlier in December, so I barely got in under the wire before the new year hit. But no, it's really good to be here, and I'm awake and just, you know, kind of kick me a little bit if I doze off during the show. I'm sure no one else will.
Yeah, this is a great sort of a time of year where it's kind of hard to be productive because, you know, like so many people are just not really at work, you know, or like kind of do a little work. So,
you know, that's so true. And when I found out in my business, which is the legal business, nobody wants to work come, I'd say, you know, by the second week of December, everybody comes into court and says, Judge, can we just push this off to the after the first year? Yeah. None of us want to work here. This is all the time, you know, and I learned that I didn't, when I was a prosecutor, I had a case once, a criminal jury trial, and I got my butt whipped pretty bad in a case, and I really thought I should have won, and it was about the week before Christmas, and I always, it was my habit after a case was over, whether I won or lost, I immediately went to the jury room. I wanted to get in there before the bailiffs could get in and clean the place up, and I would check what was written on the blackboards and see if there are any notes laying around and that. I usually could learn quite a bit if I could get in there before the bailiffs, so I usually did, and I went in there, and I was, of course, it was after a defeat, so I was particularly wondering, scratching my head, what happened, until I went in and noticed very loud in this room, unlike anywhere else in the courtroom, they had put these speakers right outside the jury room, facing out into the town square, playing Christmas music. And they were playing the happiest, you know, Christmas music that would just make your heart swell with goodwill toward men.
Well, and right, and now although this is so maybe this is the way we could get some justice in this system, is if we can, like, instead of passing out jury nullification pamphlets in front of courthouses, we bring in PA systems and broadcast Christmas carols. Well, would that get us more like not guilties?
It may have worked that time, but it cured me of ever wanting to have a criminal jury trial the week before Christmas, you know. And after it happened, you know, I thought, well, you know, I mean, people will often go in and they're in the Christmas spirit. They're just not feeling very vindictive, and of course, a prosecutor, you know,
that changes later though, right?
Come after in there, I want some law and order, you know?
Yeah, when do they get their vindictive nature back? I'd say, mid-January or right after New Year with the New Year's Day hangover? Like, is that when it comes back?
I don't know. And not everybody.
That peace on earth, goodwill to men stuff. Oh, heck with that. We got convictions.
Yeah, and there are people that get real grumpy around Christmas time, and if I had a way to get 12 of them on my jury, I would have probably done that. But this was in a small town, and everybody.
I can hear your selection. I can hear your selection questions. Are you going to a big family gathering on Christmas? Raise your hand. Who stays home alone on Christmas? Raise your hand. Right.
Get rid of all of the depressed Christmas people. And no, keep them. They're looking
right,
for
depending
blood.
On what side you're on, right?
Now, after that, I never had a jury trial in December. never once after that. And I found after I could just say, Judge, can we just pass this off to after the first of the year? And, you know, the defense attorney goes, yeah, I don't want to work. And I go, I don't want to work. And the judge, yeah, I don't want to work. And so they push it off. And so December's kind of this kind of free time. Free time for in the legal business. It's I really enjoyed it because when I was in the restaurant business, I mean, they made me work my tail off, you know. And holiday times were as bad as anything, you know, coming up to
right.
Christmas and that. But boy, in the law business, December's some good time. Good times.
Awesome.
You just take your time off, take it easy, and then the week after Christmas, nobody wants to work that week. I mean, right? I mean, who would want to work the week between Christmas and New Year's? So you take that off too. I'm taking it off this week. I don't work for the government anymore. I quit that almost 10 years ago, but I still have retained the good habits that I acquired working for the government, and that is taking off.
Well, a lot of time off.
Taking off
a lot
time.
Of just relaxing.
Around
me time.
The holidays. Well, you know, I read these articles, you know, and I get the emails and stuff. They send them out talking about how lawyers are so stressed and everything and how we have the highest suicides and everything rates. And I end up, you know, wanting to stave that off, you know, kind of push that off, make sure I don't get too much stress and everything because it just can't be good for me. And so Happy New Year. Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year to you, and happy solstice, and whatever other miscellaneous wintertime solstice-based holidays people may
I would not want to leave out any of the druids in our audience, so yes.
Yeah, right. You'd be surprised. You know, this show reaches far and wide.
I have many pagan friends, so.
Nice. Hey, today I spent the day in Washington, D.C. Can you believe that?
Oh, you are bringing me down now.
Well, actually, I mean, we went to the museums. It was like a family trip to the museums, and these museums are spectacular. They spare no expense. We went to the Natural History Museum, Smithsonian. It is gorgeous. The exhibits are extraordinary. Everything is perfectly maintained, and incredible exhibits. You know, highly recommended it. But it's kind of creepy being here. And I mean, the first thing I said, well, you know what? It's a Sunday during the holidays. I said, mostly, there's a pretty good chance that, like, all the Congress people have left town. So it felt a little safer. Like, you might leave your car unlocked because Congress isn't in session. But, you know, but we're, like, walking right by the FBI building and the Internal Revenue Service building and all these other, I'm like, it's just a real scary vibe down there. But, hey, museums, awesome.
So did you get to see some, you know, dinosaur skeletons or the Spirit of St. Louis or something like that?
Yeah, I saw all that good stuff. We dropped into the Air and Space Museum for a little bit. And, yeah, well, also saw Spaceship One, which is one of my favorite exhibits in the Smithsonian because it is the first private spaceship. So that's pretty cool. And that's hanging there. Yeah, right by the Spirit of St. Louis, which was, as far as I know, also a private venture. So there's a lot of cool private stuff, like the Wright Flyer, like one of the early Wright Flyers is in there. But then we're watching this story, and it's like, and in 1909, he sold the plane to the Army. And like, okay. You know,
nothing's been the same since.
Yeah, right. He became the first, like, you know, military airplane contractor, but military bought a lot of those, and of course it was the military Wright Flyer they have hanging there. They have ICBMs in there. They've got Predator drones, you know, and these are, you know, good lessons for the kids. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like you can really, you know, I asked the kids, like, you know, what do you think that's for? You know, it's to kill people. Correct. I like the more fun stuff.
They didn't get that from their public school, did they, Jim?
Well, my kids don't go to a government school, but
yeah,
you know, they know. But there's a lot of really fun stuff with, you know, aviation history and space early space flight, and, you know, they even have, like, cosmonaut suits and the Soyuz capsule, and they got some really neat stuff.
No, I bet that was great. It would be. It's creepier though to see, you know, like a predator drone. That's. Do they ever use those for any defensive purposes that you're aware of?
What? No, I don't think so.
You know, when you see one, you look at one
for spoiling wedding parties.
The only possible use for this machine is to kill somebody in their bed, you know, or.
Well, makes me think of there's a meme going around, the one that's got the drone pilots and they're talking and they say, hey, what's the difference between a terrorist training camp and a wedding? And the other one goes, I don't know, I just fly the drone. I mean, of course, we're laughing at horrible tragedy. Yeah,
it is. It is. So what else did you see in Washington, D.C.?
Well, this those mineral exhibits in the Natural History Museum are just spectacular. Minerals, there's, of course, dinosaur bones, and that's pretty interesting. Skeletons, just animal skeletons of so many different kinds of animals to really get to study their skeletons and compare them to one another, I found to be fascinating. And again, every exhibit there is pristine and perfectly designed, and I mean, they literally spare no expense there. Well, why should they?
No, that's true. Have you seen the there's a new show on Netflix right now called Dinosaur 13, and it's a documentary about the largest T-Rex that was ever discovered. And the dinosaur, of course, I mean, what can you say? Those are really cool to see. But the story was about it was a private fossil hunters up in South Dakota, and who I guess just learned how to be fossil hunters on their own, but actually achieved a real high level of professionalism when they found this T-Rex skeleton. And everything was going great until the government got involved. But
we've heard that before.
But I think we're going to have to talk about it when we come back from the market.
Nice. Right on. Worms.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help Liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we are back from the market. And this is Randy England here in Missouri, and I'm talking with Jim Babb all the way in Virginia. Are you in Washington, D.C.?
I am safely across the border into Virginia at the moment.
But you were talking about visiting the wonderful museums and that in Washington, D.C. And before we went to the break, I was mentioning this a show that's a documentary that's on Netflix called Dinosaur 13 about Sue the dinosaur, which was found. It's been a long time, like 25 years, 1990, I think, when these paleontological workers or fossil hunters in South Dakota found this T-Rex skeleton, which turned out to be the largest T-Rex skeleton, the most complete T-Rex skeleton. The most complete skeleton they'd ever found before was smaller and had 40% of it was recoverable. This one was an 80% and the biggest one they ever found in South Dakota. And they tried to do everything right. They went and found the owner of the land and bargained to have him allow them to. He sold them the fossil, and then they had to dig it out and took it back to their private museum that they had back. I think it was in Hill City, South Dakota, which is in the Black Hills near Rapid City. You know, that's where Mount Rushmore is, and What's that thing with the is it Geronimo that they're carving a mountain?
Crazy Horse,
yeah, Crazy Horse Mountain there. Well, anyway, it's all in that same area, and they started restoring this thing and got a ways into it when all of a sudden one day the federal government shows up and they steal everything. And
sounds familiar. Have we heard this story before?
Yeah, and they're so fearful, they send a bunch of idiots in to come and seize all these fossils. And the guys that are restoring them.
Wait, what department is this?
The Department of Federal Idiocy or something.
The Department of It's Ours. We're taking it or we'll shoot you.
Well, that was the deal, but they were so fearful, the guys that had it and had bought it were so fearful of the damage and how this was the most valuable find on Earth that they assisted just to keep everything from being destroyed, to let them take it all away. And
you don't want them to just come in and just start smashing everything.
So the first thing that happened is that they ended up deciding that some I hadn't been dotted or some T crossed or something, that the guy that sold it to him was part Indian, and there were some rules about whether he had the right to sell something on the land just by his own permission. And a federal court threw out the sale and gave him the fossil back. Gave him the fossils, and I don't know if they ever got their $5,000 back. They thought they bought it fair and square, and turned out that the government said, no, it's his. And so then, that's half of the story, that this guy got it back. And eventually, the fossil, that got resolved. But meanwhile, they had taken all of these documents and every fossil that these guys had in their thing, and it was a lot more than just the T-Rex, and ended up filing, I don't know, 100 or more felony counts against these fossil hunters for taking fossils. And
is it one felony per bone? Is it one felony per bone fragment?
It was something ridiculous like that. And in the end, the jury ended up throwing out almost all of the counts. But the head guy, he ended up, for not declaring some money that he was taking out to buy a fossil with, not declaring the money, they ended up sending him to prison for 2 years for this.
What?
For not declaring that he had $10,000 or more with him as he was leaving the country on a trip to buy some fossil. And he went to prison.
Oh, man. They got him with the capital controls.
This was a Ross Ulbricht type thing where we have to protect our fossils, and so this guy has to have an example made of him. So he went to prison, and then he finally got out. He was in the same prison with Timothy McVeigh and whatnot, and he got out, and then
all the worst of the worst are there. You've got your fossil buyers, your mass murderers.
Yeah, that's right. And then he got out, and then they decided what they're going to do about the fossil. And they sold the fossil to at auction. It brought $7.2 million or something.
And who got the money?
The Field Museum in Chicago got the fossil, and the guy who owned the land to begin with got the $7.2 million.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Freedom Fiends. We're back. This is a trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends. I'm Jim Babb, and I'm with Randy England.
Hey, Jim.
All right, Randy. Did we finish talking about the dinosaurs, or where were we on that?
I don't know if I finished up. I think on our story about what happened with the dinosaurs, it was eventually auctioned off by Sotheby's to the Field Museum in Chicago, and the $7.2 million price that was paid by the Field Museum ended up going to the Indian guy that had the land to begin with, who got the fossil back. So I guess he came out very well on the deal, and the other people ended up with nothing, plus a guy went to prison for 2 years.
And the guy went to jail for no good reason.
Not so good for the original people that found it and did the work, a lot of the work in restoring it. But I'm not sure the government came looking that good on the thing. But if anybody's more interested, the documentary is on Netflix, and it was pretty interesting. So, was there anything else about your dinosaur experience there? No,
I think we covered most of the good stuff.
Although there
was that interesting dinosaur story with Nicolas Cage. So this is great. So Nicolas Cage buys some kind of dinosaur skull for like $276,000. But he was forced to give it back because evidently it was smuggled out of Mongolia, where you're not allowed to export.
Wait a minute. Was
dinosaur fossils.
Was the government involved in this one too?
Yes, in fact, of course.
You're making this up then. I just had this story about the government come in and crap it all over these guys' parade, and now you're trying to like top me with this story about how the government came in and you got a celebrity, right, you know, with his dinosaur bones, and trying to tell me that the government came in and dumped on him and his dinosaur head, right?
Well, I'm not sure what role the Mongolian government has besides just saying it's ours, and that's who Nicolas Cage had to give the skull over to. Now, it also involved the U.S. government, and I'm not really sure how this works, but there was, I forget what they call it, but anyway, they said the skull was unlawfully taken, and there had been a U.S. attorney in Manhattan had filed a civil forfeiture complaint to take possession of the item. However, the suit did not name Cage as the owner, but it specified this, and the government just said, "No, maybe, you know, tell us, what does this mean when they file a civil forfeiture complaint?" Is that just saying
I'm
it's ours?
I'm not sure about a dinosaur, but I'm guessing that's what caused Nicolas Cage to fall into such a philanthropical mood to donate the dinosaur fossil back or something.
Right. I guess, you know, Nicolas could have looked at it two ways. He could have fought it, and they would take it. He'd have no skull, and it might not look good, like in the Hollywood tabloids, right? Like, oh, look at that. He's a bum for taking that away from those poor Mongolians.
How do you know? How do you know there wasn't a threat of prison?
You never know, right? Maybe this was more serious than we thought. But who knows what the level of threats were? But I don't know if he was ever. You know, I don't think anybody, it didn't name Nicolas Cage, at least in this particular government form, but who knows what the real story behind the story is.
Well, they always name the item that they want to seize, so it's, you know, the United States of America versus $4 and some change, that sort of thing.
Right. They're right, and they just, so in this case it was, you know, against the, you know, U.S. versus the skull. And they say, hey, we're complaining that it's not in our hands. and the U.S. attorney, what, I don't know. I guess they were just on the, you know, on the verge of grabbing it. So Nicolas Cage, you know, I don't know. But anyway, he's out $276,000. And the Mongolians get a skull. So the government, of course, it's not the Mongolian government's skull. I don't know what they'll do with it. But maybe it'll be put in a museum, at least over there. But hey, you know, what is it about? Why does the government claim to own everything that's in the ground? I don't understand that. It's because it's the king's. It's like the Sherwood Forest. Like, it's all the king's. Is that the way it works?
Well, it's kind of like, you know, trying to shoot a deer on your own land. You don't really have the right to do that.
You better get a permit for that, Freedom.
Yeah, I, you know, it's there's no, I couldn't explain it. There's not no logic for it, except I guess the government seems to have an interest in the number of deer I have on my farm or something. I don't really yep. know whose business that is, but apparently it's other people's business more than it is mine. So anyway, but that's kind of a, boy, that's kind of a bring down subject. I don't even want to talk about it anymore. Holy cow. Hey.
Well, hey, you know what? The dinosaurs are extinct. They can't, they, no. It's like,
well, that's
they can't
kind of
defend
depressing
themselves.
Too, right? Yeah, yeah. That's right.
That's even worse for them, if you yeah. think about it.
I think there's an island in down South America or something that has some. Hey, did you hear that John McAfee, I don't know if you heard back in, I think it was maybe in October, maybe it was before then, maybe this October is when I heard about it. John McAfee, the fellow who started up and once sold and then sold out, and I hope he made a bundle, for his McAfee antivirus software that, you know, so many people have had
right.
and I guess still have on their computers. He's apparently led a very colorful life and announced that he was going to run for president of the United States under, I think, a newly formed cyber party.
Okay.
To, you know, he wanted to be president and was going. One of the main, I think one of his main things was that he felt that the candidates were not giving enough importance to the issue of cybersecurity and that we were way, way behind in terms of, I don't know, the Chinese, I guess, and that sort of thing. And so I hadn't heard anything more about it, but then just in the last, when was this? Christmas Eve, it says. He has come out and announced that whole cyber party thing, run for president, forget that. Just forget that stuff. And he's going to run. He's joining the Libertarian Party. He said he's going to join the Libertarian Party where he is will land the nomination for president.
Okay.
And that's kind of interesting.
Hey, why not?
Why not? I mean, I don't know who else is running. I think, let's see, my friend Daryl W. Perry is running.
Yeah. I think Austin Peterson.
Austin Peterson.
Surprisingly enough. Is running. That's kind of a weird one. Who? I don't know. I don't really pay that much attention to these. But let me ask you this: what is your view about? You're not a fan. Are you a fan of voting in general? Or
the only time that I vote these days is when there is a local tax issue that okay. I have some chance in a blue moon of actually affecting. And
right.
so I'm willing to go and vote no.
Because there's at least a mathematical possibility of having some type of influence on
yeah.
something. It's somewhere, and, somehow.
And I have mixed feelings. I know it encourages them in that. But I'm thinking, no, when I the last three, four tax initiatives over the last several years, we, and I say we intentionally, we and the other negative citizens of our town have shut them down over and over and over and over again, and it's almost getting fun to do that. They just keep coming back, and the most fun is that after the last tax initiative gets defeated, they come out and a couple days later, the city council or whoever they are, and start explaining why this is really their fault because they just hadn't explained it well enough to the taxpayers, and it was really their fault, but they were going to explain it, and finally these stupid taxpayers were going to figure it out finally, and we're going to agree to be taxed more. And, I confess my weakness. I'll probably go back and vote no if they do it again. But I just
It's certainly an understandable position. I mean, you know, I might even, you know, do the same thing. If I thought it was, you know, if I thought it was going to make a difference, I'd certainly be tempted to go do the same thing.
Well, it's not a big town. And, you know, but usually I can't, I don't usually don't vote for people because it's, I mean, even if they're a good person, I feel like I'd be contributing to their corruption then.
That's right. You would be encouraging them, and you know, and basically everyone they hurt after it's going to be you're partially responsible for every damage, you know, they do, right? Like, aren't you have a little bit of responsibility for anyone they hurt down the road?
That is that's really true. And if you're a person who is if you're a libertarian of the sort that you say, I'm a libertarian, why? Well, the reason why I am is because I don't think it's right to do to other people which I would not want done to myself, okay?
Right.
It's kind of, you know, part of the golden rule there, which I believe in, and I think it's wrong. And then if you can get to that point, then you're obviously going to say, well, would it be wrong for me to go out and hire some guy like the local sheriff to go out and steal from somebody, you know, that I wouldn't steal from? And once you reach that point, you feel like, there's no way I could go to the polls and hire somebody to do my dirty work. And so I can't. I just can't.
Right.
And that, there you go. I mean, it boils down, you know, there's always the liberty issue. And just as much as the next guy, I say, hey, leave me alone. I want to be left alone. But also, I feel, you know, kind of a moral duty to leave other people alone. And you kind of
you sound like some kind of crazy anarchist. Well, like, how did you?
You know, in the sense of, I mean, an anarchist
leaving people alone. Whoa! Wait a minute. Whoa! This is radical talk. This is a little too radical for me. I don't know.
That's the internet meme. The libertarian meme that, you know, libertarians want to take over the world, and then leave you alone. So.
Yeah, well, do you think McAfee would leave you alone if he were elected president?
Well, I tell you, I found an interview.
You know, we're going to the break.
Him and what he would do. Let's talk about it.
Come back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org. All right, back with Randy England. I'm Jim.
Hey, Jim.
All right,
and we're back, and I think we were talking before the break about the latest candidate to throw their hat into the
right, and is it McAfee?
Race.
McAfee,
John.
Who McAfee. We remember for making like antivirus software and stuff.
Yes, and John McAfee has now announced that he's not going to run under the cyber party banner. And will instead join the Libertarian Party. He may have already joined by now. This article was from Christmas Eve. And he said they have 10 candidates for president, none of whom have personally, said a laughing McAfee, who is running on a platform to pardon all marijuana users in prison and stop the U.S. from being the world's policeman. So that's kind of some.
At least those
stuff.
Are libertarian platforms. I mean,
yes,
so
are.
Many people come along and want to be the candidate, right? And they're not even. They don't even have libertarian platforms. So at least he's ahead of them.
Yeah, there's other candidates running for the Libertarian Party nomination that are more statist than this fellow. I think. I ran into an interview when he announced under the cyber party. I assume he hasn't changed any of his positions, but he gave kind of a statement that kind of took in a lot of his colorful life, I guess, making explanations of of his positions before anyone ever asked him. And he wrote, I've learned much through the school of hard knocks, he says. I have never murdered anyone, he says. And of course,
I guess is that going to be a regular campaign question for him? But you know what? He hasn't murdered anyone. That puts him ahead of two previous, at least, Libertarian Party presidential candidates, the actual candidates, not people seeking the nomination. You had Bob Barr as a congressman, right? Like as a congressman, his wars murdered all kinds of people, right?
Yes.
Right? So he's ahead of Bob Barr, right?
Well, he probably said that, though, to clear the air about in 2012, he was.
So you're saying that wasn't just to differentiate him from Bob Barr and Gary Johnson?
You know, probably both purposes, but also to clear the air over the fact that his next door neighbor in Belize was murdered in 2012, right after somebody poisoned his dogs, McAfee's dogs. And uh-huh. I think the authorities kind of said, well, this guy got killed, somebody poisoned McAfee's dogs, so they wanted to question him about this. And so, you know, in respect of concerns about that fellow that got killed, he started out saying, I have never murdered anyone.
Okay.
And he did. He got out of Belize and got back to the United States. And he says, I do not steal. And see, that's good.
Again, that puts him ahead of Bob Barr and Gary Johnson.
Every politician, I would say. I avoid causing physical harm at all costs, he says.
Okay. Better than any politician.
I tell the truth, no matter how painful it may be. And that has to be true. Have you seen this guy on YouTube? And
I can't say I have.
You know, being a heavy drug user and selling drugs in the old days and that. And
okay.
And he has multiple young women. They always show them all in like one picture. I don't know if he's had them all at once or whatever, but
some sort of shockingly young, or when you say young women, do you mean like, ooh, or?
Well, I'm kind of old, so I mean, young could be under 40.
Are these adult women? Let's just say, are these adult women we're talking about?
that's what he comes up to next, to address the issue, that very question. He addresses that. So we'll come back to that.
Let's get back into this. Yeah.
In the next hour. And there we go. We'll be back.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
This is the Freedom Fiends, a symposium of unsupervised sounds that caress your freedom, Fiendbone. I'm Randy England, and my co-host tonight is Jim Babb. And Jim is hacked into the CIA's subspace mind control to beam our pirate signal of protest directly to your frontal lobes. So lose the tinfoil hats and know that you're free. Hey, Jim, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Great to be with you, Randy England.
And I'm sure you're 1,000 miles away from me, so I had to shout. And I should mention that the Freedom Fiends is covered all over by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So, Jim, you have a unique situation that that you have come across during the break. And
oh, yeah. This is great. This is a
personal situation.
First. Yeah. I'm very proud of this.
Tell us.
Well, you know, I've done this before. In fact, all summer long, I was traveling with the family, mostly camping and whatnot, and doing where I made a mobile studio in my car, which actually works really great as a soundproof environment. And, you know, it's not as comfortable as doing the show from my house, but as long as I have a good internet connection, everything's, you know, it worked out great. So anyway, I'm traveling over the holidays and think, well, okay, you know, it's no big deal. I know how to do this. But I'm not really in the mode of making sure I have everything. And I forgot my inverter, which is the, you know, the little thing you plug into your car and it allows you to, like, charge your laptops and stuff from your car engine. So I'm like, you know, and even then I'm like, eh, that's okay. You know, the laptop's fully charged. It's a brand new laptop. You know, it's got like, it showed like 8 hours of battery charge. I'm like, yeah, I don't have to worry about this. And then I realized, like, whoa, I'm looking at it. And after the first hour, I'm like, wow, it says I have like 1 hour left on my battery. I'm like, I guess it takes a lot of juice. So I'm like, uh-oh, this could be interesting if I run out of power. And, so anyway, but I look around.
Interesting for you or for me?
For the listeners that would enjoy a solo Randy England performance, which wouldn't be that bad.
As but a twist in the wind. But go ahead, Jim.
It would be professionally embarrassing for me, right, to have an equipment failure of this nature, right?
Yes, it would. You should
but,
that
you know, I never yield to adversity. And so I'm here at a Starbucks using their delicious, perfect Wi-Fi. Works great. And, you know, and I'm like, hey, look, there's some table and chairs out there. I wonder if there's a plug. Boom. Here's a plug. So I'm now.
Hold on. You said you were at a Starbucks.
Yeah.
You could get the idea that you were in one, but you're not in
no,
one, are you?
Near one using their Wi-Fi. The Starbucks is closed hours ago.
Okay. And so, you're not even sitting in your car.
Right. I'm now at a table and chairs on a actually quite pleasant December night, enjoying the great outdoors while I do the Fiends. And this is a first. And but
so
I'm charging.
We hear thunder, wind, it's real.
Yeah, exactly. Or I don't know, like a tractor or like a truck might pull up and start unloading stuff. We'll see.
If the police come up to roust you, you got to promise to just keep it on the air until.
Oh, we will. That would be the best Fiends ever. And anyway.
All right. Well, you know, go ahead.
I'm going to say, I don't think it's going to require a visit from law enforcement, but it might. I'm just sitting here. It does look a little weird. Like, why is a guy in the middle of the night sitting at a closed shopping center at a table with a computer talking into a microphone?
Into a microphone. And you don't think that would draw attention?
I don't know. It's not so bad. Anyway, so we're talking about that McAfee guy. You want to get back to McAfee?
We were talking about McAfee, who we had established that he had never murdered anyone. That, as he
right,
said,
which put him ahead of several Libertarian Party candidates.
And he said, "I do not steal, avoids harm to others, tells the truth," all of which, all the evidence that we have would that
say he's totally unqualified for politics.
Well, who isn't? But I think he's telling the truth here.
Tells the truth?
Yeah. Tells, well, because of
it's,
all
it's
the...
It's a neat idea.
all the things that he has said about himself and his life, you're thinking, well, there aren't many other bad things he could say. Well, he could say that he killed somebody, but he didn't. So he said, "I."
Well, just tell me that that he's, you know, as long as everything else is fine. It sounds like he's got some libertarian positions. I'm sure some listeners are out there going, "Come on, Gary Johnson never killed anybody, right?" Now, are you?
Well, nobody said he. Nobody said he did.
Gary Johnson at all?
He was the governor of New Mexico, right?
I did. Well, he worked for an organization that that put a hit out on a guy, and he signed the death warrant.
As governor?
As governor. Yeah.
Well, then
and that was not an act of self-defense.
That would
right?
put him so, a cut below Mr. McAfee.
Right. Well, what I'm saying is McAfee is head and shoulders above the now, as far as I know, Michael Badnarik never murdered anybody. You know, and I don't think Harry Brown ever murdered anybody, and I don't know about the ones before that. So, recent trends are not that great for candidates, though. So,
did they ever deny murdering anyone, though?
Well, I don't know if anyone ever asked them, and it never was really required to be part of their campaign platform, and. They never had to lead press conferences with, "Hey, I didn't murder anybody."
So in that's your why every Clinton situation, you may or may
you know
not
what
have
if
to
the what
that.
If the Clintons were suddenly had no, to the, respond
the
to that
Clintons the Clintons would have to answer that because you got you know like Vince Foster and stuff like that where people have said mean things about the Clintons. And but one concern you had, because I think I mentioned I saw some YouTube, so I know about this stuff. He frequently has had many young women around him. And so one of the things in his statement, he said, "I have compassion for all people." And next, "I have never raped nor slept with a legally underage woman." Now, that would answer your question, I think, because you were wondering, you know, how young.
Well, I'm not going to accuse him of any wrongdoing. And,
no, you were just saying.
Until I have information otherwise, so.
Although I do find this line, legally underage, you know, to be.
Somewhat, it's not a moral question he's answering,
no,
it's a legal question.
Legally. And I assume that would vary depending on the country that you were in.
True,
you know, like Saudi
but let's
Arabia
face it, even without the state, that custom would be different in different cultures, in different places. So,
well,
you know,
he's not crossed that line. So, and that, you know, I feel more comfortable with that. I'm kind of square, so, you know, I'd go with that.
Yeah,
he said he's goes on. "I have honored my father and my mother." Well, you know.
Okay.
I mean, who wants a president who's like mean to his old mother? You know what I mean?
Well, you know what I mean. You know, George. I'd say, you know, what if George Bush, you know, had said that, right? George W. Bush. You know, it's like, "I honor my mother and father." Well, in that case, that's a bad thing because his father is the. The other George Bush, so
well,
who deserves
he does,
no honor.
I didn't read the other half of the sentence, and he said, "And I have respected those worthy of respect," and that's kind of loaded.
Haven't
too.
We all?
That's kind of like the legally underage women, you know. Okay, so
I also respect everyone I feel deserves respect.
But then he goes on, after those few excuses and wanting to clear up some things where somebody somewhere might have cast a cloud over his reputation, he says, "As to all the rest, I have broken every rule ever written. Some forays over the line have enlightened me, some have brought me down. But I could not be the security talent that I am had I not done everything that I did."
Fascinating. What a colorful character we have here. I mean, I think there's no doubt about that. This guy is a character.
"I understand the high and low of life, and I understand the human heart. I see the misery in this world, and I know that only compassion and courage will fix it." So that's kind of his lead in to that.
I want to like the guy. I want to like
him.
I hope he pans out as being somebody that I should like.
Well, anyway, they go on, and this is kind of a lengthy interview, but it gets to a point where they're asking him about specific issues. And here you kind of get a feel about how much of a libertarian he really is, because he isn't fully, I don't think. But when you're comparing him to some others that are running, and you know, I think everybody knows that Gary Johnson isn't, he hasn't announced, I don't believe, but people say his name, and he's making up his mind, I understand. But he's not, you know, thrown in libertarian, and neither is this fellow, I don't think completely, although probably more than the others. He says, let me see here. I hate to look at it. Someone asked him, would you pardon Edward Snowden? And he says, absolutely, and also Ross Ulbricht. And
right on.
Yeah, and then I saw he did a YouTube.
So did he specifically bring up Ross Ulbricht himself, or was that one of the questions?
No, he brought it up himself.
Which makes it even 10 times as great, you know?
Yeah, and in a YouTube, I watched an interview of him. He said he would release all marijuana offenders in federal prison immediately. Well, I don't know if
only marijuana offenders.
Only marijuana offenders. Yeah, and he said something like he would make drug use a fine-only misdemeanor.
Why should it be a misdemeanor? Is that up to the president anyway?
Well, this is how people talk when they're running for president.
Right. So it's certainly better than any of the the political spectrum that's fed to us that goes from the full spectrum from Donald Trump to Bernie Sanders, right? It's certainly better than anybody on that axis.
Yeah. Now, he talked about Donald Trump, and someone asked him what his thoughts were on Donald Trump and why are you more qualified to be president. And he said Trump would best serve the country by doing what he has always done so well, creating thousands of productive jobs in private industry. So I guess he wants him to lose. And we will be back on the Freedom
Worms. Feeds.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateur, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back from the market. This is Randy England. I'm here with Jim Babb. And Jim, I think your technical difficulties apparently have ended because I don't hear the wind blowing in the background across your microphone. What happened there?
I think I have enough charge. I returned to my Cocoon mobile studio here, so out of the elements. So I think we're in good shape.
Yeah, it makes it less likely you'll be busted.
Yeah, you know, I'm still vulnerable to drone strikes and EMPs, but you know, I think we're good.
I think we were talking about John McAfee, who is going to be a libertarian candidate for president, and he had said that he thought Donald Trump would do well to just go back and create thousands of more jobs. Which is kind of a typical politician answer. But then he dug a little deeper and said, I'm also skeptical of someone who claims never to have written an email leading a country in a cyber war with China.
You know, who's the one that's never sent an email?
I think that would be Donald Trump he was referring to.
Really?
I don't know.
Remember what Trump said? Trump said, "Well, I'm gonna have to call up Bill Gates, and we're gonna have to close up these internets, right?" Didn't he say that? Something stupid like that?
You know, they, and I'm sure that I don't appreciate the seriousness of the cyber war situation, because when I, when someone says cyber war, you know, in my head it kind of pops in, okay, you know, here's some guy hanging over a barbed wire fence with his guts blown out. And then I imagine a cyber war, and I'm thinking, well, cyber war doesn't sound so bad, you know?
It's like people defacing each other's websites.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you know, it's like, well, if we're going to have a war, I kind of like that better. But maybe I don't appreciate the problems. You recall that the, was it the Stuxnet virus that was somehow installed on the centrifuges in Iran? That I don't know if it made them like go so fast that they just flew apart and stopped.
Oh, really? Interesting. I didn't know that. Wow.
And I don't know. I don't know if they decided who was responsible for that. It had to be.
It wasn't Mossad. Who else would it be?
It would be us or the Israelis, the United States. Right. But
and our guys are probably too dumb to do something like that. So, and when I say our guys, I meant those guys that are in proximity to us in this political boundary.
Yeah, but even when you say, wow, that's kind of the part of the cyber war that actually stepped over into the physical world, and what horrible thing happened? Oh, it made a centrifuge spin.
Isn't it really more about like industrial espionage and like trade secrets and, you know, and all the like corporate assets and things like that, digital assets and,
well, yeah, the Chinese
mailing lists and databases and credit card numbers and that kind of theft? It's really more like a theft, you know, war. I mean, that's my impression. Maybe I have no idea what I'm talking about.
Well, I don't either. But, you know, I mean, like the Chinese could get, say, the formula for Coca-Cola, and that would be the end.
That would just, yeah. God only knows what would happen then.
I don't know. I don't know.
But maybe it'd be more like, you know, like CAD files for parts. You know, like some pretty, you know. You know, I don't know. I don't know exactly what kind of secrets they'd be interested in, but you know they're out there.
They probably
drug
already
formulas.
They've already gotten a hold of Cody Wilson's gun. Was that the Liberator?
Cody Wilson from Defense Distributed, who released 3D printed files for 3D printing guns. Yeah, he released the STLs files that people can use to print their own guns at home.
You also created the
Ghost Gunner machine. Have you acquired a Ghost Gunner machine, Randy?
You have a Ghost Gunner, don't you?
I'm keeping it a secret, so let's keep it amongst the fiends and all of our fans, okay?
Are they still allowing you to make machine guns?
I may or may not have transferred ownership or moved it to a secure and undisclosed location, just in case anyone who's monitoring this thinks they're going to raid my illegal gun manufacturing operation.
Well, it only shoots toothpicks, so it doesn't matter, right?
Right, exactly.
I was looking at the kind of a statement of different areas of what he thought that, you know, the government should do and government shouldn't do. This was McAfee. And he was asked what technology research should the government fund. And, of course, he thought cybersecurity and that sort of thing.
Wrong.
Because considered that to be like defense, I guess.
Wrong. We need defense from the government.
You know, he should have said that.
Well, maybe we can coach him.
The Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Freedom Fiends. We're back. I'm Jim Babb. I'm with Randy England.
Yo.
Former prosecuting attorney, right?
Very former, yes.
I'm so glad that you found honest work. I am so happy.
Well, I'm still a lawyer.
Yeah, but you're on the right team.
I never take a case unless I am opposing the government.
Sweet.
In that case.
Okay, never. Really?
Yeah. Even the civil cases I have participated in since I left the prosecutor's office, the government was a defendant in those cases. So I've sued the Secretary of State on several occasions, and that's the only stuff I'm really comfortable with. So you got to.
What can you sue the Secretary
that.
Of State for? I'm just curious.
Oh, I've done it a few times regarding different ballot issues where they were trying to game the thing at the polls and by giving crooked explanations of initiatives, things like that. Whatever side, you know, political side the Secretary of State is on, they'll try and, you know, to either help a certain initiative along or they'll try to kill it if they don't like it.
Right.
And of course, any politician will, you know, try to kill something if it's going to damage their power or their constituents, whatever. So, you know, I didn't mind, being on the side, if as long as I'm opposing the government, I'm cool with it. So
all
anyway,
right. But
it,
all right.
So there.
Yeah, you're a fiend. That's what comes. It's part of being a fiend, right?
I'm a fiend. I'm a fiend now. Yes, yes.
So we're talking about Libertarian Party presidential candidates, and you know, I think one thing we should just even ask is like, you know, because you know, some people ask. Me like, hey, you know, you're probably against people running for office, right? You're an anarchist, you know, you think it's wrong to rule over people. Like, is it, you know, it's certainly wrong to be in office, but is it wrong to run for office, right? You know, and it becomes an interesting question.
Well, if you run, you could be in office if you ran and won, right?
Right, but that's not really part of the debate for a Libertarian Party candidate, right? So we don't. That's not really ever going to be a question of that, whether that's even mathematically feasible or not, right? So
yeah,
the question is, but is it okay to still to run? And I generally think it is. In fact, I ran as a Libertarian Party candidate some years ago for state representative, and my positions were basically the same as they are now. But I thought, you know, this would be fun, and I could maybe go in a debate with the incumbent and I could say some things, and as long as I'm not trying to win, I can say whatever I feel needs to be said. And at the time, I think it was a good use of my time. It was before really we had stuff like social media, and it was really opportunities for media were a lot less then. So since then, I've sort of figured out that it's a lot easier to get media attention, plenty of easy ways to do it and get your message out and through the media without running for office. But at the time, it seemed good. And Harry Brown was the first person that ever, I ever came across that was explaining what libertarianism was.
And I was he flipping ran for president.
Yeah. While he was running for president, I was flipping channels and came across him on C-SPAN, and he was saying stuff like ending the drug war, bringing the troops home, right? And I'm like, what? I didn't even realize I could agree with a presidential candidate. I was like, what is this libertarian? What is that? You know, like, and it just started rolling around in my head, and then, you know, and then you meet more libertarians, and you're like, you know, next thing you know, you're a freedom fiend. You know, years later, it's a slippery slope. Once you know, so I figure anything that's going to get people started, I can get behind in some degree, right? But then maybe it brings credibility to the system. So there's a plus and a downside, I guess.
So if you're not against us, you're for us.
Yeah, I don't know. You know what? But I tell people, you want to do it, right? Seriously, go do it. Have fun doing it. Make a mockery of the system. Steve Miller, okay, freedom fiend, he ran for judge in Philadelphia. Are you familiar with his campaign?
No, I didn't even know he was a lawyer.
He's not.
No, he's a comedian. Even more interesting.
So the condition is, if you win, you to serve as a judge, you have to be a member of the Bar Association. Okay. Yeah. But we just said, well, if he wins, he'll join the Bar Association before taking office. Right.
Okay. Well, I could try.
Well, why not?
I'm sure right? I'm sure they would love to take his bar dues. But well,
but anyway, the chance again. He's a libertarian candidate. The chance of winning was zero, so that wasn't a question. The question was, can you have fun doing it? He ran on a platform. Get this was his platform as judge: not guilty. Isn't that a great platform?
This?
What's that?
Sure. Sure.
And it was, you know, figure, hey, we got enough guilty people. You know, there's enough people in you know what? We're just going to just not guilty, okay? Until we get this justice system fixed, it's just not fair to convict anybody, I don't think. So we had fun with that. He got like 6,000 votes, over 6,000 votes. So
well, that's more votes than I got when I lost my race for prosecutor.
Ooh. Now, had you, you know, as prosecutor, though, I think what would you have done as prosecutor?
Well, that wasn't, I didn't quit being a prosecutor at the time. I was an assistant prosecutor. My boss retired. I ran to basically keep my job, you know, okay. Or not my job, to get his job. And and I was beaten in it. And I ended up
by him?
Taking a job at it. No, by the guy, the other guy that ran for a prosecutor.
Okay.
And so I ended up being a prosecutor in another county after that.
So you weren't like running against your current boss. That would be kind of funny.
No, he's a good guy. Okay. In every way except that he was a prosecutor. But I didn't know that at the time because I was a prosecutor. I mean, you know.
Right.
I didn't get that part. I didn't realize that that victimless crimes were wrong to prosecute.
Well, how did you figure that out? That'd be an interesting.
I figured it out. I first figured out way back when. I mean, I was probably a prosecutor just a year or two, and I realized that not that the law was wrong, but that the law was useless because it did absolutely no good to take the drug dealers off the street.
Okay.
I mean, you take a drug dealer off the street, 10 minutes later, all you've done is reduce the age to whatever his little brother's age is when he takes over his business. And that's the way it goes. You just create younger drug dealers by pulling, you know, the older guy off the street. That's all it ever did. And it never did any good. I can't recall any time that I ever noticed or anyone ever noticed the flow of drugs in my town stopping or slowing.
Right, so it was just the practicality of it all. Just didn't make any sense.
It was useless. Well, yeah, and I've always paid taxes, so I was kind of thinking, gee, this costs a lot of money. I mean, I was doing okay in the sense that I was at least making money from it. Most people, it's a loss. The guys that are going to jail, they're losing, and the taxpayers, they're losing because they're not getting anything for their money.
Yeah, but those fat cat prosecutors and assistant prosecutors, they're making bank.
Well, us and the cops, we were the only ones making anything out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the judge that sent them to prison, I mean, you know, that sentenced them, they make their share off of that too. But like I said, at the time, you have to be really, really, really bad person to know that you're deeply evil and then keep doing it. You know what I mean?
Hmm. Right. Most of the evil is done by people that think they're doing good work.
That think they're doing good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I know I felt the same. And in getting out of it, I felt, I guess, less comfortable. Although in your as a prosecutor, you start out doing certain kinds of cases, and by the time I got to the end of my career, I wasn't doing much of the victimless crime. I was doing, you know, robbers and murderers and
right
burglars, people that were actually people that needed to be prosecuted.
Yeah.
So there was less of that kind of pressure, like should you be doing this or not. And so, you know, the last case I did was a murder trial, and, you know, I don't feel guilty about putting that guy behind bars. I killed a girl, you know, so I'm okay with that. I'm still okay with that. If I feel bad about anything, it's the guy that, you know, went to jail because he sold a marijuana cigarette or something. I feel bad about that.
Randy, what happens if you send a violent offender to jail, and once he gets to jail, he continues to be violent and hurts one of those non-violent offenders who's trapped in there with him?
Well, that's part of the problem of having non-violent offenders in there. Although your point is actually good in the sense that you send somebody to prison, part of the punishment isn't that you're going to be beat up or killed or raped or something, you know, in prison. That's not officially part of the punishment. Unfortunately, those things happen, and people know that they happen. But I can't recall ever being happy about sending some, you know, drug dealer to prison. That, I mean,
to prison, it's not like that's ever gonna like benefit their victim in any way.
No, you're right. You're right. You don't feel well when you're a newer prosecutor. Actually, you do. Yeah, I mean the flush of victory. You know, when you win a case and everything. But I know by the time I got to my last case, the last case that I tried, it was a murder trial, and when it was done, and I got up to leave the courtroom after the jury, you know, came back and pronounced guilty, you know, all 12 of them. I was just kind of sitting there, you know. I was thinking, okay, there was no family was there. The defendant had no family there. The victim had no family there, and I thought, dead girl, you know, I mean, that's just pure tragedy. And then this guy who did it, I mean, yeah, he's a bad guy, but his life is ruined, and now he's going to prison for the rest of his life. There's nothing there to be happy about.
Well, you know, except that the fact that you know, at least, you know, theoretically, he's now not in a position to harm more innocent people, right?
Well, that's true. And like I said, I didn't regret what I did, but you couldn't rejoice either. What was to be happy about?
Right.
It was just everybody's life was ruined here.
Yeah, it's not going to bring the victim back.
Everyone involved, his life is ruined. Great, you know.
All right. Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to The Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And Ask Me About My Worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1¼ inch, and now they're 1¾ inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends. This is Randy Engel with Jim Babb, and we were talking about the libertarian candidacy of John McAfee of the McAfee Security antivirus software, which I don't think he has anything to do with lately. But a few more things real quickly on Mr. McAfee. Like on firearms, he's for him. He says an armed society is a polite society. Let's see, what else did he have here?
It's homosexual, not very creative, but it is, it's, you know, there you go.
Homosexual marriage. People of either sex, couples should be equally allowed to suffer the frustrations of marriage along with everyone else, is his position. On the FCC, he doesn't think we need an FCC. He He's kind of weird on
that's the correct
debt.
FCC position.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. You know, he says we're not the world's policeman. He's mostly in favor of open borders, got some qualifications there. He would shut down the TSA completely. But here's the weird thing. He would keep paying them their paychecks.
Why?
Well, because we spend $8 billion on the TSA. $6 billion is like for lollipops and machines, I guess. And the $2 billion a year is for their salaries, and I guess they would be happy if you kept paying their salaries. Don't ask me why. Welfare would stay in position until everybody has a job, I think he said, basically. And
so forever.
Well, who knows? But
until everybody has a job, come on. Look, we're going to pay you not to work until everyone's working. That sounds like a brilliant strategy.
We still got some statism going here. That's true. But none of the libertarian, so-called libertarian candidates are going to be, do you think they're going to be any closer than that to a
society? They're all going to be, they all hit and miss because, you know, most of the ones that the last two, you know, Gary Johnson and Bob Barr were both this hodgepodge of positions. There was no underlying libertarian principle that guided their positions. And as you can tell with this hodgepodge, you know, some of it's libertarian, some of it's not libertarian. Obviously, there's no guiding principle. He's looking at it from a practical point of view. Much kind of like the way you were, as you were starting to say, like, "Hey, I'm figuring these things don't work, and here's some common sense changes we can make that move in a libertarian direction, but aren't guided by an overriding libertarian principle." Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does. It makes you wonder though. Do they understand? You know what not having force, you know, from the government means. I mean, you get somebody who says, "I want to legalize marijuana," and everybody like runs in and rushes in and tells him he's a libertarian.
And meanwhile,
I see somebody
right.
like that. You know, you ask them some questions, you go, "Man, you're not a libertarian; you're just a pothead."
Right. Or, seriously. You know, these, let's tax and regulate weed. Think of how much money the government can make. Yay. What? No.
Yes. And he's now the people that he's up against. There's I think I mentioned Daryl Perry.
Perry's a guy that listen, I think Daryl Perry, from what I know so far, he's the one that I would root for.
He's probably solid. I think he is. But
you know what? I know that people, because when I look at the libertarian presidential candidate is somebody whose job is to go out and teach libertarianism. Okay. And guys like Bob Barr and Gary Johnson can't do it because they're not fundamentally grounded in libertarianism.
That's right.
Daryl is. So Daryl could go out, and I'm 100% confident he would give a libertarian answer on virtually any topic anywhere. You don't have to wonder what his position is because it's coming from a principled place, not from a, I think government's going to work that time. Like, no. You know? So Daryl is, I just if it's what Daryl wants, I hope he succeeds. But I think it's neat that this guy's in there, and you know, and because he's an interesting character, shake things up a little bit, get people talking. Why not? And you know, whether he's the candidate or not, I don't care who the candidate is. So it doesn't really matter. But
well,
I just like to see people mix it up.
He doesn't show up yet on the official. A Libertarian Party declared candidate list, but we'll be looking for that to happen. I don't see, is it Austin Peterson, who I understood is running for Libertarian, but he's not on the list either.
He's the guy that says, "Oh, the Libertarian non-aggression principle, that's unrealistic. I didn't sign that.
Hey,
I'd like to be the Libertarian Party candidate."
Need to have, for balance on the Libertarian ticket, you need to have some status, and he could serve.
Yeah, he's like the anti-libertarian Libertarian Party candidate. Yeah.
Hey, what do we got coming up tomorrow, huh?
Tomorrow.
I don't know.
We're going to cover that big story. Swindled drag queens blamed for Kingsport attack. Wait till you find out this one. Yeah.
Tomorrow night.